Good afternoon and welcome to Results Matter Radio. My name is Erin Mazars and I'm the Chief Marketing Officer and Director of Client Service for the law firm of Burr and Foreman. And I'll be your host today on our segment along with my co-host Lee Cantor, who is the CEO of Atlanta Business Radio X. If you are new to Results Matter Radio, welcome to our show. The show was developed to bring you pertinent business information and offer real life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Before we jump into today's show, let me welcome my co-host Lee. Hey, Lee.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
It's been a great day.
How's it? It's a little chilly out there today, though.
I know. I don't like this. You know, I'm from Miami, so yep. I like it. It has to be 80 degrees minimum or else.
Well, you might hit like that Monday. You know, we came in like a lamb and we're going out like a lion. That seems to hold true.
I can hold you to that. I'll be 80 degrees. You
Monday?
Promise? Yeah.
Well, if the weatherman's right.
I don't believe that. What other job can you have to be wrong so often?
I know. Yes, and still be so popular.
That's amazing.
Okay, well, enough about us, Lee.
Okay.
We have a great segment today for those in the banking industry. Since the launch of our Results Matter radio show, we've received many topic suggestions for future segments. Due to the strong reputation of our firm in the banking industry, we've had many requests to discuss receiverships and the ins and outs of the same. I'm excited about our guest today, Lee. Very excited. I'm hoping you and I might learn a few things.
We always do.
I know, especially me. I'm excited about the guests because they're very well known in the banking community and speak frequently on the topic of receiverships. If you're involved in the banking industry, then today's segment is especially for you. Today, we have Andrew Bolnick and Graham Steiglitz joining us. Andrew has 30 years of experience in all aspects of receivership across the commercial real estate spectrum. His services include property management, operation of homeowner associations, completion of construction, working with local, county, and state governments and regulatory agencies, taxing districts and all interested parties, and developing and implementing marketing and sales programs. Graham Steiglitz is a creditor's rights and bankruptcy partner at Burr & Foreman and is resident in the Atlanta office. Graham assists clients with commercial reorganizations and workouts, as well as transactional and litigation issues involving commercial transactions, receiverships, real estate, and other business-related matters. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Erin,
Andrew, nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Glad you could both be with us today. We appreciate your taking time out of what I am sure is a very busy schedule based on this topic. My basic understanding of receiverships is that they offer an alternative process for the successful resolution of troubled loans and that they can be a benefit instrument to both the borrower or a beneficial instrument to both the borrower and lender. And I think I'd like to just jump right into it. Andrew, you know, can you let me know and let the listeners know, what is the role of the receiver in just short and simple terms?
Thank you, Erin. Well, primarily the role of the receiver is to take over a troubled asset, real estate property, and to preserve and to protect that asset during the period of litigation while the foreclosure process is proceeding.
Okay, great. Well, Graham, is the receiver an officer of the court?
Exactly. The receiver serves as an officer of the court under a fiduciary duty for the property that makes up the receivership estate, whatever that may be. And their obligation, even though they're typically appointed through recommendation from a bank, their obligation is not to the bank, it's to the estate, the property itself, to make the best outcome for the situation.
Okay. And how exactly are they appointed, either of you? You know, Andrew, I know that you're involved in this heavily since you are a receiver. How are you appointed?
Typically, the mortgagee or the bank would file a motion to appoint a receiver. They would actually ask the court to appoint a receiver, and they would then name a party that they would like to see as the receiver and tender that party to the court. The court would hold a hearing. And if they found cause for the appointment of a receiver, they would then appoint a receiver. Typically, it would be the receiver that the movants or the mortgagees had requested.
How do they choose? Like, what makes a good one?
Well, I think typically the lenders try to rely on receivers that they believe have the experience and the knowledge to take over that particular type or segment of real estate property. Be it an apartment building, a hotel, a resort, a golf course, a marina, office building, retail center.
So they're specialists?
Yes, they are.
It helps if they have background information that makes the transition from old ownership, the borrower,
right,
to the receiver. So while they are specialists, a lot of them are specialists in numerous related,
right,
type fields, because taking over a commercial property as far as a mixed-use development is very similar to taking over a hotel in some respects. But if you haven't ever dealt with a hotel before, there are a lot of instances where that lack of experience will be harmful to both, right, the borrower and creditors.
Okay, great. Well, you know, Graham, you mentioned earlier the receivership estate. What type of property actually constitutes the receivership estate? I'm sure it varies.
Well, it completely varies upon what the lender's looking to do, and it depends upon whether it's a consensual appointment of a receiver or if it's through the civil litigation process and it's contested. Sometimes the receivership property will be much smaller. Typically, you will find whatever the collateral serving for the bank's loan will make up the entity of the receivership estate.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's interesting, Lee.
This is a whole new world for me.
Yeah, I know. I know. As I was learning about this, there are many things that I had no idea that go into, you know, when something falls under the receivership estate. You know, Andrew, we were talking about, you know, the different things that you might have as a receiver as far as expertise. Why might a bank appoint a receiver? Is there something cut and dry that if you're in the banking industry, you know, why should they use a receiver versus someone else? Or not at all, I mean.
Well, when a bank has a loan on a property that's producing income, and let's take, for example, an apartment complex, there are rents being generated every month. And if the borrower has gone into default and they're not paying on the loan, but there's income being generated.
Right, because they know there's income being generated.
That's correct. So what they'll do is they'll go to the court and they'll say there's some income being generated. We're not seeing any of the income. It's not coming to us as the bank, as the lender. We know there's rents, and we'd like a disinterested third party, someone who's not connected to either the bank or to the individual owner of the property. We'd like a disinterested third party to go in, collect the rents, pay the expenses, and basically to escrow or to put in account any excess rents for the benefit of the lender.
Okay. And early on, you mentioned that you need to protect the property. So for the bank, one of the reasons that they might appoint a receiver also is just pure protection.
That's correct. Also, many times when I come in as receiver, I find the property is uninsured. Taxes haven't been paid. Taxes aren't paid for a long period of time. They could go to a tax deed sale from someone that might buy the tax certificates when they're not paid, and the bank could lose title to the property. So to protect their collateral, they want a third party in there that would then take control of the property and make sure that it's protected and really kind of, you know, for them there when the case is eventually settled.
Okay, and upkeep?
Upkeep, typically the rents will generate the income necessary to pay the expenses of the property. And when they're not, the bank has the option to advance money to the receiver.
Okay.
To pay.
But how is that to-do list decided, like the order, you know? Like the people who live there might think upkeep's the most important thing.
Right.
Where the bank might think the taxes are the most important thing or some other element. Like, how do you decide how the money's spent in what order?
Well, I think preserving and protecting is obviously you want to maximize the value of the collateral. So one of the most important things that you want to do is secure the rents. You want to maintain the property. Obviously, insurance is a very important thing, one of the most important thing. Taxes can be important, but it depends on how delinquent they are, whether they're in jeopardy of being sold to a third party that may have bought the tax certificates. When they sell the tax certificates,
okay,
people don't pay. So it the order determines how delinquent the taxes are, what the condition of the property are. Are there life safety issues? If there's life safety issues, obviously those are some of the first things that you want to deal with. But
that's why the receiver has to be kind of neutral in this, right?
That's correct. The receiver has to be neutral at all times. I have an obligation both to the borrower and to the bank to preserve and to protect the collateral, because I'm not going to ultimately make the decision on what's going to happen in this foreclosure action. So really mine is a neutral party.
Okay, because many things
for the
happen.
Benefit of all
yeah,
sides.
Yeah, okay. And Graham, you were going to mention.
Well, a number of the things that Andrew was talking about are willful and gross negligence on the part of the borrower. But sometimes the borrower is in a position where they're flat out of cash and the bank doesn't want to continue advancing any money to the borrower in possession of the property, they don't want to necessarily take back the property because it's a performing asset,
okay,
and it's worth more as it stays alive than if you have the stigma of a foreclosure on there. So they say, we need to give money to someone to make sure that the grounds are maintained, that safety is upheld, but we want to put a receiver in, someone who we know has fiduciary duties, is going to live up and make sure everything done is done correctly, and they don't have to worry about continuing to advance money to their prior borrower.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, Graham, who should be a receiver? How does the court choose the individual? Or is there a certain type of background that you should look for when you're looking at receivers? Obviously, Andrew has a very long history in this area, but are there individuals like him?
So, does that, like, were you in the you were in the business? If say it was a multi person property, is that what you used to do? Like, you used to own those properties? Is that what makes a good receiver in that? Do they have to have been an owner of that?
Well, I think that that good general business practices apply in any and all types of businesses, and having that kind of a background is helpful. I have a business background. I also have many licenses, real estate, mortgage, securities licenses, and serve many functions. So over the years, there are times when I have been receiver on a property where I had not done that particular type of property before, but the application of basic business practices has then given me the experience to be able to handle some new segment of the property. And after the years that I've been doing it now, I don't think there's many types of properties that I haven't done numerous times. And I think that's what's important to lenders now, especially in these times when we've had these difficult economic times over the last couple of years. It's even more important that the receiver that's appointed is one who does understand the type of property that they're taking back or they're trying to foreclose on, knows how to operate that property and to maximize the value.
Okay.
Do you mind sharing a story that maybe explains, like, here was a property in trouble, you came on board as a receiver, and you were able to, you know, you kind of worked it, they worked it through, and then it kind of had a happy ending at the end?
Sure. I had a resort hotel down in Marco Island. I had the Radisson in Marco Island, Florida, and I took that property over. It was being managed by the borrowers. The property was doing approximately $8 million. As the receiver, I changed the management group and brought in a management company from one of the big hotel chains in the Disney.
Now, do you have to get approval to do that, or that's within your purview?
That was in the scope of the order that appointed me. We brought the value, we brought the income up to almost $12 million, and we increased the value of the property for sale purposes from $17 to almost $25 million.
Wow.
So do you get a bonus for that? Or that's just part of your job?
That was just part of my job.
Are you thinking about a career change, Lee?
I'm thinking that.
I noticed you're taking some good, diligent notes over there.
That's funny because there are a large influx of people who want to be receivers based upon the recent economy.
I'll bet.
And having good experience pays off for the bank because when they come in, it's a troubled situation.
Right.
And in addition to having the background and experience in that business or in that sector, it's helpful if they have a background of making quick decisions, getting to the root of issues, and being able to move, I mean, just incredibly rapidly at the onset, because by the time the receiver gets put in there, things have decayed for some period of time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. So that's, I think, for all those that are listening in the banking industry who are on that lender side, a key element that they need to pay attention to, looking for the receiver. What are some of the fiduciary duties of the receiver, and are his or her powers limited, and how are they limited?
Well, everything goes back to the order appointing receiver, and in Georgia, in the statute, is very open as far as what the powers of the receiver can be. So it's really just a deal point issue as far as what you get in the order. So I've seen some where the receiver is relatively hamstrung as far as his ability to sell any assets without going back to the court and getting approval. I've seen others where you get power of attorney from the borrowers, you're able to sell any property, and it's effectively as if they're the owner, although technically title hasn't transferred yet. But they can do everything and anything to effectively transfer.
Right, as if they were the owner.
And then there's added benefits where you can sell it free and clear of lien. So in the instance where you have a real estate development with a lot of material means liens, et cetera, as long as you have proper notice and the authority of the court, you can sell that free and clear, which other than bankruptcy, you're not going to find any avenue where you can do that. And so on one instance, if you didn't have this power, you'd be hamstrung by having to pay off these material mens liens,
right,
and effectively destroy any value in the estate. And now in a receivership, you're able to really move product.
And if I may add, there are certain types of properties where the bank actually does not want to become the owner through the foreclosure. You take, for example, a marina where you may have some environmental concerns. The banks would much prefer to see the receiver be able to sell the property during the pendency of the receivership rather than actually take title and then be exposed to some environmental spill or catastrophe in those marinas where they're selling gasoline or they have pump-out stations for large boats.
Now, do you help educate the lending institutions when you become the receiver on do you give your opinion of, I think you ought to try and sell this, and here's the reasons why?
Right. Or are they telling you that?
Yeah, or do they make that decision and you aren't allowed to?
Well, typically when I take over a property, I will file a report and I will tell them what's going on in the property, and I do make recommendations where I suggest that perhaps they might want to sell it through the receivership. I think more and more banks today are selling property through the receiver when they can, than trying to take title and then try to move the property
themselves
after
yeah.
the fact.
Yeah.
And to be clear, Andrew takes his orders from the court. He doesn't take it from the bank.
Right, right.
His,
I forgot
his
that.
Fiduciary
You're right.
duty
yeah.
is to the court.
Yep.
Now, 99% of the time, those interests are aligned with the secured lender because 99% of the time, the secured lender is undersecured, meaning the amount they've extended is more than the amount that the collateral is worth.
It's worth. Right. Okay. Yeah, well, that makes sense. So I'm going to go.
Well, can you kind of walk us through, like, as soon as you're appointed as a receiver, like, what do you start doing? Do you, like, kind of assess the situation, or have you already assessed it prior to being told you're the receiver?
Well typically, I know that the appointment is coming. So I have an opportunity to go to the property and observe the property. Many times information might be shared with me. It depends on the situation.
But you like to actually like get boots on the ground and start walking around and talking to the managers and like at that level?
Well, not until I'm actually appointed. As soon as I'm appointed, I go in again. I assess the life safety conditions of the property to make sure that there's no issues with those. Those would be the first thing, to make sure the property has the insurance, as we spoke of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a process. Each property is almost like a fingerprint. Even though you may have two or three hotels, you have unique characteristics in each one. And so each one has to be individually assessed. And it's kind of instinctive at this point where you just go in, you know what you need to do, and you act accordingly.
Due to experience.
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, one of the questions I had that it just came to me was if I'm in the, you know, if I'm a lender, why would I not want a receiver?
Well, there are not the situations. I'm going to turn your question around and say, why do you want a receiver? When the situation is where, you, as Andrew explained, you don't want to be in the chain of title, but you can affect control and move it from either someone who's unable or unwilling to properly manage the collateral, that's a good reason to have a receiver. Another good reason to have a receiver is the sale's free and clear without having to. The bank always could foreclose, but that usually has a stigma on the price they're able to get versus right. appointment of a receiver and sale in the open market. They're normally going to be able to get more money, and they still have the same extinguishment of junior liens. Additionally, you have an ongoing business that you're able to maintain and ensure that it stays valuable. A hotel that goes dark for a week.
Right, that's not good for
gone.
Anybody.
Right.
It's lost all of its true value that it's built up.
Right.
And the same thing with any sort of commercial operation. Additionally, outside, when people are looking at appointing a receiver, they're usually also looking into the bankruptcy scenario as far as this is a credit default and it could end up there. A receivership is a much faster moving issue than what a bankruptcy typically will be. It will be less intrusive as far as on reporting requirements, and it will be less intrusive as far as the time that the bank officers will have to spend on this matter. What a receivership allows is kind of a force multiplier for a bank's special assets group. It's able to effectively manage its troubled loans. I say manage in air quotes because of the fiduciary relationship. But it's able to make sure that its collateral is being used to its highest and best use to ensure that the most money comes back to the bank for that collateral.
Yeah, it's just based on our discussion. I come back to the same point as why, if I'm a lending institution, why would I not want one? And I'm just saying that because of everything you've said, it seems like it's in the best interest of, even though you're a neutral party, it does seem like it's in the best interest to look for a receiver or ask for a receiver by the court. I was trying to think of a way that a lending institution might say, well, I don't think I really want to use a receiver.
And just to kind of add to that a little bit, you know, occasionally when a borrower is having a problem in repaying his loan and he realizes that he can't anymore, he stops paying attention to the property. We kind of talked about that earlier. It's mm-hmm. not maintained well. And so the business sometimes suffers. Maybe they're not leasing apartments as aggressively. Maybe they're not spending money on marketing for their hotel. So as a receiver, when I come in, not only do I provide the benefit of securing the monies that are coming in, but in most cases, I attempt to grow the business back again.
Right. There's an upside with you. There's no upside if they just go right to bankruptcy.
It doesn't seem
right?
like it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my sale points.
Well, okay. Now we've talked about this, you know, kind of soup to nuts. How does this come to an end? Like what, how does the receiver
end? The receiver relationship could end either through a natural discharge, meaning that the receiver has performed its duties. And let's say it's a single asset, commercial hotel, and it's sold. They no longer have an estate to manage. They'll close out. Additionally, a motion to terminate the receivership could occur from the defendants. Very rarely would it come from the lending institution, since they were the ones who wanted it in the first place. And then a bankruptcy could be filed, and there's a whole lot of case law as far as what stays in part of the receivership. Does it all flow back to the bankruptcy court? A lot of times the defendants will proactively or prospectively waive certain aspects of the bankruptcy case, knowing that this property is fully encumbered by the bank and that while it could be property of the estate, it's of no value.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, it looks like we are about out of time for today's segment. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us, Andrew Bolnick and Graham Steiglitz. It's been a great discussion. I have to tell you that we have a history here on our shows of asking our guests one final question, and it's not in our script. So, gentlemen, if there was one thing that you could tell our listeners that they need to pay attention to, what would that be? Graham?
Well, I would say that you need to act sooner than you think and not to let the problems linger, because the sooner you get a receiver into a situation that requires a receiver, you're going to just make out much better with your collateral and preservation than if you wait around and see if it turns around next month. So I would say speed and decision making.
Good advice. Andrew?
I would say to if you're finding that you are having trouble repaying your loan, to contact your lender earlier and see if you can work out some kind of a scenario that would avoid the necessity to have a receiver.
Great. Both good points, gentlemen. As for our listeners, if you have any questions for Andrew or Graham, please visit www.resultsmatterradio.com, and you will find their direct contact information there. Thank you again to everyone who's listening and to my co-host, Lee. On behalf of Burr and Foreman, a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast, we'd like to remind you, if results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give us a call. You can visit our website to find the right attorney for you at www.burr.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.